Om Sahana Bhavatu, Sahana Punaktu, Sahadiryam Karavavahai, Tejasvi Navadhitamastu, Ma Vidvishavahai. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. We're on verse 150. We're still really dealing with Vairagya and how the enjoyment of any kind of bogas are enjoyments, pleasures, these type of things. For a jnani, even the smallest little enjoyment is considered a lot. It's considered a lot, even though it's very limited in nature, because the jnani understands the inherent limitation of any type of boga or any type of like or dislike. Just having the desire itself is fraught with kleshas. It brings about different sorts of agitation, right? Because then you need to fulfill the desire in one form or another, and that itself is a problem. It's called a klesha. And so, because of that, as the prarabdha unfolds, for jnani, whatever little desires, whatever little bogus enjoyments and things like that come, even little ones, the little pleasures that come, those are great. That's fine. That's enough. We're not looking for something big. And so now he gives, he's continuing now to give some examples on this. So here's the next example that he gave a couple of examples before. Now here's another one. Buddha mukto mahi palaha, grama matre natushiti. Grama matre natushiti, pararna buduna krantaha, pararna buduna krantaha, narashtram bahumanyate, narashtram bahumanyate. You might have a different version in your book, but it says the same thing. Second line might be a little different, I think. It says, buddhamuktaha mahipalaha, grama matrena tushyati paraihi na buddhaha na akrantaha na rashtram bahumanyate. It says, a buddha muktaha mahipalaha. Mahipalaha is a king. A king who is buddha muktaha has just been released from captivity. Say a king in these wars that in the Mahabharata is full of wars. Say a king has been captured and being held in prison. And this king is finally now released from captivity. Buddha mukta. Mukta means released. Baddha, baddha mukta. Baddha, not Buddha. Baddha mukta. Baddha means bound, released from bondage. So this Mahipala has released from bondage now. Grama matrena tushyati. That king has just been released. Tushyati feels satisfied. Is content, is satisfied, grama matrena, with a mere village. Right? Not that he doesn't need the kingdom, just a little tiny village, that would be great, whatever. Right? So satisfied even with a little village. But paraihi na buddhaha, a mahipalaha, a king who has not been bound by anybody, by others, not been captive by others. Nor na akrantaha, also not afflicted or assailed by anybody. So totally unassailed, not being bothered by others, hasn't been captured by anybody. Then that mahipalaha, that king, narashtram bahumanyate, that king is not even satisfied with a great kingdom. Even a great kingdom, a rashtram, is not enough. They don't consider that. Namanyate means they don't think that to be bahu, enough, sufficient. That's not enough, right? Very interesting verse, right? So you can just imagine in your own in your own life, you know? It's like a person who becomes well after being sick, you know? After being sick and realize what it's like to be sick. When you become well, just the little joys of having a body, of being able to walk, you know, of being able to breathe, to run, to actually do things, become such a great joy. Now, one friend of mine who's a paraplegic, many years ago, he told me, he was a very athletic boy, running the sports and all of that, and then he was in an accident and became a paraplegic. And once he told me, and he got a lot of money from the settlement also, from the accident. It wasn't his fault, and it was the government, the road was not done properly. It wasn't his fault. And so they sued, and he got a good amount of money to, not to make him wealthy, but a good sum of money to protect him for his lifetime. But he told me that if he could walk, if he could only walk again, he would get rid of, throw off all, he would give everything. He'd take off all his clothes, everything, all his shoes, everything, and just walk out naked. And he would be the happiest person. And he manages fine as a paraplegic, but if he could walk, he would give up all of this. If I could have good health, I would give up all of this. You know, that's what people say. And we've experienced that in our little ways ourselves, you know. If only I could have this, I would give up all of this. And that this is down to the absolute basics. And so here, for this king, if I could just have my freedom, I would be happy with the smallest village. You could even say, if I could just have my freedom, even with a little house out in the corner somewhere, that would be fine for me. I would be ecstatic to have that. I would be so happy. So that's the Viveki, right? That's a mumukshu. I mean, the mumukshu is the one who has recognized that this world, in fact, cannot provide the wholeness or the fullness or the satisfaction that I seek. It doesn't exist. And so, once I become freed, right, from the illusion that had caused me to be seeking that, then whatever little enjoyments are there, that is fine. My ananda in the first place, the sarupa ananda of myself, isn't dependent on those enjoyments. And I'm not seeking, I'm not asking the creation to give them to me. However, the creation continues to give them. The little happy moments, whether it's the smile of a child, or petting my little tibby, whatever the little things that happen to come your way, you know, lots of little things come your way, the little pleasures in life, the sunset, whatever it may be, all of these things are just, they're just little moments of joy that the little lights that the creation gives you, all kinds of them, all of the time. And those are the things that we feel we're so happy with those things. We're not really looking for anything else because we're not even asking for those things. Right? In fact, the mind uses its source of ananda is the atma. But then the creation continues to light up in all of these little ways as the prarabdha goes unfolding. And those things are just fine with me. That's the idea of this verse. So, now, another verse. Viveke jagrati sati dosha darshana lakshane katam arad karmapi bhoge cham janayishyati viveke jagrati sati dosha darshana lakshane katam arad karmapi arad karma api bhoga icham janayishyati. In the preceding verses, there have been some verses talking about the prarabdha karma. Because of the prarabdha karma, we will still have certain types of desires. So that came in the previous verse. He wants to deal with that now. And he deals with it by bringing up a question, an objection. He says, Viveke, when jagrati sati, when viveka is awake, jagrati means awake, when the viveka, when your discrimination is awake, means when you're alert, when you understand. And what does he mean by viveka here? He says dosha darshana lakshane, which is characterized by dosha darshana, seeing the defects in icha, in desire. In other words, if I have a desire, that's a klesha itself. Klesha means that's an agitation. The very rise of the desire itself is a klesha. It is an agitation. Why? Because that means that I want something other than myself. It's not just Ishwara now. There's a desire as a dokkham. I want this thing. This thing is away from me. Now I have to go through whatever it is in order to satisfy that desire, because the desire is moving me into action. So if I'm a jnani and I know that the Atma-svarupa, that my own being, is the source of all ananda, and I'm awake to that and I realize the defect that is there, the klesha, the agitation that is natural to desire. It comes along with desire. The desire is, I want this so that I can be happy. That defect is there. So wouldn't that viveka is there, which understands the defect, the doshas in the dosha darshan, it sees that the problems with the desire. Then it says, how then, if that's so, katam, how, arabdha karma api, even the arabdha karma is the same as prarabdha karma. How can karma, even the prarabdha karma, bhoga icham janayishati, how can the prarabdha karma, how is it possible that it can bring birth, bring into being a desire for some sort of enjoyment? How is it possible for that to happen? It's like saying, how can a jnani, somebody who has nishta, jnana nishta, how is it possible for them to have any type of desire? How can a desire arise in their mind? Because with that viveka, they know that the desire is fraught with problems. Any desire, it's fraught with problems. You know, why not just have the mind abide in myself and just let the things neutrally come as they come? No problem, they can come, they can go. I have no care one way or the other. Why would this desire be entertained at all? So that's the doubt, that's the question. So he says, next verse. He says, Naisha dosho yato neka, Naisha dosho yato neka, Vidam parabdhimikshate, Vidam parabdhimikshate, Icha nicha parecha cha, Icha nicha parecha cha, Prarabdham trividham smitam, Prarabdham trividham smitam. On the first line I broke a compound because it would be too hard to chant the whole line for you. So, na eshaha, doshaha, yetaha, then aneka vidam. Aneka vidam, one word compound, aneka vidam, prarabdham ikshate, icha, anicha, parecha, cha, prarabdham trividam smitam. So this verse, we always are talking about this, and here's the verse for it. He says, na eshaha doshaha, there's no defect here, there's no problem here, it's not that there's something wrong with the jnani, there's a reason these desires arise. He says, na eshaha dosha, there's no defect, yetaha, because anekavidam prarabdham ikshate, because prarabdha is seen clearly to be manifold. There are many types of prarabdha. So aneka means many. Anekavidam means many types. Right, many types of prarabdha. Then he says, what are those? He says, the prarabdham, trividham, smritam. Prarabdham is said to be, smritam means this is what's been passed down by the tetravits, by the ones who know the sampradaya. The ones who know the sampradaya, they have said like this, that the prarabdham is trividham. It is actually threefold. Icha, anicha, and parecha. Parecha is also called anyecha. Icha means swecha, my own desire. The prarabdha manifests, because this is the thing. The prarabdha, the karmas that have caused you to take this birth and take you all the way through, this prarabdha has to engage you in the life, right? Because you are part of the, you're part of the picture, you're part of the scene, okay? And so you have to be engaged in the scene of your life, in the play of your life. So how does the prarabdha engage you into your life? Well, three ways. Either the prarabdha gives a desire in terms of your own mind. A desire occurs in your own mind. Or it says anicca. The desire doesn't occur in your own mind. It doesn't come up in your mind. But there's no desire anywhere. In fact, it's not in another's mind anywhere either. It's just that anicca means the creation creates a situation that forces your participation, that calls you into it. That's the second way. The third way is paricca. Paricca means the needs of another person or people pull you into action. Because there has to be some sort of pravritti nivritti. Pravritti means what pulls you into action. Nivritti means what pushes you away. So what's pulling you? What's engaging you? And how is a jiva to be engaged in the play of your life? Well, either a desire rises up in your mind, you know, or somebody else calls you into action, paricca, swecha, myself, the icha means desire, swaicha, my own desire, paricca, para means another, the desire of another person pulls me in, or anicca, nobody's desire, but the situation creates something that engages me. And so this is how the life manifests itself, right? This is how life manifests itself. Now, just interesting is to, just keeping this in mind, look over your own life. And even in recent, you know, over the last year or so, and see when desires, compelling desires rise in your mind. Where do they come from? It's a compelling desire has rises in your mind and pulls you into action. It's not as though it's a compelling desire, so it's not something that you want to say no to. It's something that forces you into action. I'm not talking about these desires that come from another person, like you see what the Joneses are doing over there and you want to do that. Those aren't compelling. They won't drive you into action. And if they do, they can be like beating your head against the wall because they don't really have anything to do with you. But there's desires that just come up. And now you're kind of surprised. Here, this desire is here. Now I want to do this. And it pulls you into action. It's very, very interesting. And in fact, if you look at it from this perspective, you can really kind of enjoy those desires because they're the prarabdha pulling you. And then look for paricca or anyecha. Paricca means somebody else is creating a situation for me that dharmically I need to respond to. It's my prarabdha. And I realize that, you know, for many of us now at my age and close to, you know, when our parents become ill and are suffering, and it's the last stage of their life, just dharmically, the prarabdha is such that their needs definitely pull you in to that caretaking role. And it's not as though you can say no. You might say no, but you'll still do it. Because the karma is like that. It's your prarabdha. There's no getting around it. There are so many, nor do you necessarily want to get around it either. Because it's an unfoldment of your karma, and it's there for you to be done, and the universe creates space for you to do it. And then you find yourself doing it. But you would never have wished that for your parents to get ill and, you know, die and need that attention from you. We don't, and no one looks forward to that. In fact, we look upon that with dread often before it happens. Dread of that day that we know that will sometime happen. But when it happens, then there you are. You know, there's so many for people who have been parents, who have children. Your life is totally consumed by the needs of your family. There's not a thing that you can do about it. That's parecha. It's not that you, there's nothing you can really do about it, nor do you want to. You're engaged. So the prarabdha pulls you into that. And then there's the things, often it's just for an extreme example, they talk about things like natural disasters. Where there's not anything, the natural disaster occurs, you're in the middle of that, and you have to respond to that. It's not like you can say, no, I don't think I'll respond to that. Because it's happening all around you. That's an extreme example. But these are three, you know, that are pretty, it's a good kind of division of possibility, and you can have all kinds of subsets underneath them. But the thing to understand is that these are the things that my prarabdha, the prarabdha that I was born with, are what draw me into this life. And one of the ways that happens is through the manifestation of desire in your own psyche. And that will be the impelling force. And so it's nice for you to spend some time just looking at that possibility just by experiencing it in your own psyche. And it's also important. This is an important thing that Vidyaranya is discussing here, because sometimes there's a notion that for the jivanmukta, that there is nothing compelling that arises in the psyche. But that isn't true, because the prarabdha karma can rise in the psyche and it will pull you along. The desire will rise in the psyche and will pull you toward that given, whatever the object of that desire is. The difference is between a jnani and an ajnani is the jnani knows very well that it's mithya and lets that desire unfold. Right? It lets it take its course and deals with it, all the while knowing that it's mithya, all the while the mind is still enjoying the ananda of myself and not getting caught in the illusion that, oh, all of a sudden my ananda has come out here. Nevertheless, that desire is gripping enough to impel you into action. That's very forceful. If a desire will actually impels you into action, you know, it's like a car engine or something. I mean, it makes you move. And so that type of the force that a desire can have is something to be noted. And it's not that the mind just becomes placid with nothing rising in it or no impetus to go this way or the other. That isn't true. And so we can enjoy those desires as benchmarks for the unfoldment of our prarabdha. One of the ways that we just appreciate the unfoldment of prarabdha. So now he gives an example of kind of an extreme example. For the icha prarabdha. Apadyasevinas choraha
rajadwara ratha api Rajadara ratha api jananta eva swanartam jananta eva swanartam ichantyaraddha karmatah ichara oops ichantyaraddha karmatah ichantyaraddha karmatah apatya sevinaha choraha Raja Dara Rataha Api Janantaha Eva Swa Anartam Ichanti Arabda Karmataha. It says Apatya Sevinaha. Engaging in unsavory behavior. You know, inappropriate behavior. Apatya means unwholesome. Engaging, being involved in unwholesome behavior. Choraha, being a thief. Rajadara rataha, falling in love with the wife of the king. Raja is king, Dara is wife, Ratha, it means becoming amorous intentions, right? Becoming attracted to, being very highly attracted to, or having amorous engagement with the wife of the king. Unsavory. Even that, even these things. Janantaha, okay, Eva, even though Janantaha, present participle, even though knowing, Swa Anartam, these are not good for me. Anartha means calamity. Swa Anartha, these things are really bad. Jananta, even though knowing these things are not good, Ichanti Aradha Karmataha. Ichanti means he desires them. He desires them Aradha Karmataha because of the force of the power of the karma. That desire can arise. And so,
because it's raining. Think you have a cat, Carol.
What is that karma caused by another?
Cat knows. I can't know.
I don't know if I
ever
see
it. It's a little frisky.
Like Tibby does have other homes. She's got like.
I was going to say, you have to take care of her, right? I mean, is she living here?
No. Now she. Oh, okay. This is one of her places.
Yeah,
but she just feels like being here right now. Because she likes to be here when you're here. I've noticed that when the class is going on, people.
She probably likes to teach.
That's
unusual. Yeah, she likes to teach.
It's funny. I'm here
in southern Norway. Ichanti. They will, these desires will arise for them because of the force of the prarabdha. Okay, so it's kind of an interesting verse. I don't know what much to say about it. So I would say it's really kind of bad karma. I mean, say you're I mean, the type of karma, well, maybe like, for instance, maybe if you've been born, I mean, just think about it for a minute, because Vidyaranya just doesn't say things, you know. Say if you're born into a family of thieves, or say if you're born of parents, for instance, who have kind of unwholesome morals and that type of thing, unwholesome tendencies. And so you've had those kind of experiences and been involved in those type of things. So then even, and so that's part of your karma, right? Because you've been born into this type of an environment. So you've actually been born into an environment where some of these type of, you know, I'd say like adharmic or unsavory or unwholesome type of behaviors are there. That's part of your karma. And so then you become a mumukshu and you gain jnanam and all of that. But then these type of tendencies or these type of desires can spring up. That's what he's saying. You know, it's kind of interesting. I don't know what I think about that, actually.
This is even for a yoni?
Yeah. Because this verse, yeah, it's for anybody. Mm-hmm. Because he's saying, this is all going back to verse 151, where he's saying, you know, when the viveka, when that viveka is there, right? Which means you see you see the defect. See, he doesn't like. Let's see if he'll just come in and lie down. Otherwise, he has to. Otherwise, he's going to have to.
Nobody's allergic to that.
Well, if he lies down, it'll be okay. Tibby, you have to lie down, or we're going to have to not let you be here. Okay.
She's wet.
I know. That's why I feel bad for her. Okay. Please, you lie down.
No, she's totally wet.
Yeah.
She's laying down.
Okay. So anyway, let's see if she'll lie down. See, this is the thing. Like, when the viveka is there and I see the defect, the question is, how can there be the rise of a desire? Then the next verse he says, there's three ways. Either swecha, parecha, or anicca. Now he says, he gives an example of swecha. He says, there can even be like thieves, or unwholesome behavior, or falling in love with a king. Even though knowing this is not good for me, that desire arises anyway. The desire comes anyway. It's not saying you can't control it, But he does say the desire arises anyway. So be it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Nothing more to say on that. That's his example. Nachatraitadvaritum Ishwarenapishakyate Yata Ishwara Evaha Yata Ishwara Evaha Gitayam Arjanam Prati Gitayam Arjanam Prati Nacha Atra Etad Varayitum Ishwarena Api Shakyate Yataha Ishwaraha Eva Aha Aha Gitayam Arjanam Prati. What he says is, and here regarding this, even Ishwara himself is not able to stop it. Vadayitum, he says, Vadayitum, Ishwarena api shakyate. This is not even able to be warded off by Ishwara himself, the unfoldment of this type of this prarabdha. And the desires that rise in the mind. There's nothing that even Ishwara himself can't do it. He says, Yataha Ishwara Eva Ah. Because Ishwara himself says, Ishwara says, Gitayam, in the Gita, to Arjuna, Arjunam Prati. Because Ishwara says in the Gita to Arjuna, this next verse. Sadrisham Cheshtate Swasyaha. Sadrisham cheshtate swasyaha prakriter jnanavanapi prakriter jnanavanapi prakritim yanti bhutani prakritim yanti bhutani nigrahakim karishyati nigrahakim karishyati sadrisham cheshtate swasyaha prakritehe Jnanavan api prakritim yanti bhutani nigraha kim karishyati. We've done this verse in the Gita. I think it comes in chapter 3. Yeah. Chapter 3, verse 33. He says, even a jnani, jnanavan api, even a jnani, one who has self-knowledge, a jnani, cheshtate acts, sadrisham, true to swasyaha prakritehe. He acts true to his own prakriti. Right? So a jnani will act, even a jnani will act true to his own prakriti. And here by prakriti, let me just tell you what the Bhasha says here. It's kind of nice. Prakritihi nama, what we call prakriti, because prakriti can just mean the three gunas, sattva, rajas, and tamas. But when we say the jnani acts according to his own prakriti, we're talking about the prakriti, the constellation with which he was born. So this is how he says, prakritihi nama, what we call prakriti, purvakrita dharma adharmadi samskaraha, the samskaras such as dharma and adharma, which have been formed before, purva krita. They have been made, samskaras means the tendencies, dharmic and adharma. Those samskaras from previous experience. Do you know, everybody know what samskara is? It's like a vasana. Vasana or samskara. It means the actions that you've done in your past, in past lives and in this life before knowledge, those actions create habits or inclinations or tendencies. Those tendencies are called samskaras. Okay? So now what he's saying, a person, a jnani, even a jnani, is held, acts in accordance with their samskaras, right? With the tendencies that they had developed before. Okay, so Sadrasham cheshtate swasyaha prakrite hejnanavanapi. Prakritim yanti bhutani. All beings go according to their prakriti. Right? They act in accordance with their prakriti. Prakritim yanti bhutani. Nigraha kim karishyati. What is going to control that? How is that going to be controlled? Kim nigraha. What will control it? How can it be controlled? This is Krishna talking to Arjuna, right? And he goes on to the next verse. This doesn't go on, but he'll pick it up in a minute. So he says, Avashimpa vibhavanam pratikaro bhavetyadi tata durkarna lipyeran nalarama yudhishthiraha. He says, avashyam bhavi bhavanam pratikaraha bhavet yadi tada dukkahi nalipyeran nala rama yudhishthiraha. So this is Vidyarani coming in with a really interesting. He says, what we're talking about is trying to control the prakriti or trying to control the unfoldment of the prarabdha karma. What he says is, for the prarabdha karma, the unfoldment of the prarabdha, which is inevitable, avashyam bhava, means inevitable. So, for the unfoldment, for there is no pratipada, there's no antidote for that. There's no remedy. There's nothing that you can do to bring in a solution to that. So he says, if there's no remedy for this inevitable karma, this karma which is inevitable, if there would be a remedy, a solution, a way to negate or neutralize this prarabdha karma that is negative, that gets me into negative situations. If there was a way to neutralize it, this is good. So, if there was a way to neutralize it, then tada dukkhaihi nalipyeran nala rama yudhishthiraha. Neither nala or rama or yudhishthira would be stained with so much sorrow. So he's citing three figures from the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, all three of which got into terrible trouble. Okay? Nala, in the story of Nala, he left his wife and his family and went and had just like a horror story, you know, and left his wife who loved him so much, and he became possessed by something, I don't remember the story exactly, but it's just the most tragic, terrible story where he leaves his wife in this grieving pain. What has happened to my husband? Where is he? And she lives in this distraught pain for years. And Nala was the most dharmic of people. So he gets possessed by something and he goes and finally he makes his way back after so much pain and travail. Then, of course, Yudhishthira in the Mahabharata was considered the most dharmic king. The most dharmic. So dharmic that his feet never touched the ground. Mm-hmm. Right? But Yudhishthira had a habit of he loved gambling. He was possessed by gambling. And he couldn't control himself. And so Duryodhana invited him to a game of dice. And Yudhishthira made kind of excuses. Well, I, as the king, I have to accept this. I've been invited to this formal game, and I have to accept it. And so he went with all of his brothers to play the game of dice. And he ended up in the game, which the game was rigged, of course. But he ended up giving away, one by one, his entire kingdom. And then he gave away, everyone lost, you know, and gambled away his entire kingdom, and then gambled away his brothers one by one, and then finally even gambled away his wife until he had gambled away absolutely everything. And he wasn't able to control it. And he was considered the most dharmic. You know? So that's just an extreme example. And then Rama also got into trouble with Sita being taken and did certain things. And Rama is also, he uses Rama. See, Nala was considered to be the personification of Dharma. Yudhishthira, personification of Dharma. Rama, personification of Dharma. Krishna is as an avatar. Rama is Dharma. Krishna is joy, Ananda. His life is an expression of joy and Ananda. But Rama is Dharma. And so when you read the Ramayana, you see all of these things that Rama gets into trouble in this way or that way. You know, so if even these three, if they could get into trouble, were the personification of Dharma, they could find themselves falling into dukkha because of their own actions. What to speak of us? If it were possible to not get sucked into these problems, then they wouldn't suffer. They would never have found themselves in that situation. It's kind of a nice argument. And in fact, one thing that is really wonderful about reading the Ramayana, the Mahabharata, these texts, is that all of the heroes and heroines are not Pollyannas. They do get into trouble. They do get into bad situations, into difficult situations. They do a dharma, or what seems to be a dharma, or wrong acts. So they portray human beings, right? They portray human beings. And so very interesting that way. Okay, let's go. Gibby, your life is...
You're walking a thin
line.
Okay,
that's good. You're thin line. You just stay down there. You'll be okay. Yeah, that's perfect. Nacheshwara Tvamishasya Hiyate Tavata Yataha Hiyate Tavata Yataha Avashyam Pavita Pyesham Avashyam Pavita Pyesham Ishware Naiva Nirmita Ishware Naiva Nirmita Nacha Ishwaratvam Ishasya Hiyate Tavata Yataha Avashyam Bhavita Api Esham Ishwarena Eva Nirmita. Okay. Now the doubt can come. You know, isn't the Ishwaratvam? Ishwara is Ishwara. He should be omniscient, omnipotent, all-powerful. But isn't the Ishwaratvam of the Lord kind of diminished, made less by this? Because the Lord himself can't stop this, the force of the prakriti. He can't stop that from happening, right? So doesn't that diminish? The Lord himself doesn't have control over it? So he says, Nacha Ishwaratam Ishasya, the Ishwaratvam of the Lord, Hiyate, Nahiyate, is it not diminished by that? But he says, no, it is not diminished by that. Why? Yataha, because Avashyam Bhavita Api Esham Ishwarena Eva Nirmita. Because the inevitability of this prakriti, the inevitability of these desires and this prakriti pulling you forward, is something which is created by Ishwara himself. In other words, Ishwara created that inevitability. if he's the creator of it, he's not limited by it. It's his own expression. That's what's said. So, anybody see what's being said there? Let's do the next one. Prashnottarabhyam evaitat gamyatera jina krishna yoho anicca purvakam chasti praradham iti tat shrinu. He says, Prashnottarabhyam eva etat gamyate Arjuna Krishnayoho anicca purvakam chasti prarabdham iti tat shrinu. He says again, now he gave those examples of swecha, one's own prarabdha, how the prakriti is going to pull you into things. Your past samskaras are going to pull you into things, and you'll have desires arising that are not appropriate, right? And even find yourself getting involved in things that are not appropriate. That's what he's saying. Swecha can pull you into good things too. Your own desires can pull you into good things, but the point is, they pull you not only into good things, but into good things, bad things, and indifferent things. They will pull you into things that you shouldn't be involved in, that are not really good for you. So he gave the extreme example. Nobody minds the positive example, so he's giving the extremes. So now he says, for the anicca, he says, by prashnotara, prashna-utra-bhyam, by question-answer, eva-etat-gamyate, this is something that's being dealt with now, by question-and-answer between Arjuna and Krishna. Between Arjuna and Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, the anicca purvakam cha asti prarabdhan iti tat shrinu. He says, listen to this. The prarabdha karma also involves anicca. Your face is going to fall out?
Yeah.
All right, Shibi.
I think he wants to go home or something. Somebody was calling
come
or
here.
Something.
Come here. Yeah, but the door's open. Come here. You've had the time, the chance. It doesn't work. Come on.
Right. I know you tried so hard, but it didn't work.
She looks pregnant.
And has some kind of growth. Pardon? Has some kind of growth. Oh, is that it? Yeah. I just want pictures and stuff. This is going to be a real issue, probably. We're going to have to come to a solution. I'm going to make a little bed for him out there. So
feed him.
No, he said he's good. Okay. So now he says, the anicca prarabdha. Even Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita is talking about this anicca prarabdha. So he says, please listen.
These are from the third chapter.
The verses that are coming, there's more coming up here that are from third chapter of the Gita, the next one that's coming up, third chapter, and then one from the 18th chapter also. Let me just talk, I'll talk just for a few minutes on the Prarabdha Karma. Coming to terms with the humanity of a Jivanmukta, of a person, fine, but to come to terms with the humanity of a Jivanmukta, a liberated person, is important for the student. It's important for the mumukshu, because otherwise the expectations of what it means to be a Jivanmukta becomes something which is away from you and away from your experience. So that's why he spends a lot of time on this and on other things also, you know, to do with the humanity of a Jivanmukta. Because otherwise, say you to say, if I behave in this way, or this desire comes into my mind, or this type of, so I find myself in this situation or being pulled to do this, you know, that's fine if all of the things that you're pulled toward are saintly. You know, everything that you're pulled toward is saintly. All of the feelings that you have toward others and toward the world are saintly, on the positive side of the spectrum. You know, that there's no untoward thoughts that ever come up in the mind. You know, if that's what your expectation is, you will fail. You'll fail. Because that isn't the prakriti. That isn't the nature of the creation. This is why, to me, when I was young, when I was with Swamiji when I was in my 20s, I read the whole Ramayana and the Mahabharata as I was at the first course. I used to read it. I just loved it. I would read it. I read it in the English translation, but I read the complete unedited version in the English translation. And what I found so freeing was that all of the characters who were the people that were held in the highest esteem were humans who had the whole gamut of emotions, who sometimes got angry, who sometimes did the wrong thing, who sometimes had jealousy, who sometimes were delusional, you know, in their rage or in being possessed by their desire, whatever it was. They made it very clear that it was not about having a gamut of feelings or finding yourself in situations or making mistakes, you know. It's how you handled those situations. It's how you handled those feelings. It's how you handled those mistakes. How you handled those good actions and bad actions. Those wrong choices. How do you deal with them? And so all of these heroes and heroines, you actually see how they deal with their mistakes. How they deal with their emotions. That's much different than trying to present a perfect person who doesn't have emotions, only has the good side, you know, only does the right action. And so, by understanding the prakriti and the prarabdha that will pull you into many, many, many different situations, that doesn't get in the way of your knowledge. You still have choices to be made. If you make a mistake, then you recognize you've made a mistake. You know, it's not that you're not ever going to make a mistake or that you're not ever going to make bad choices. The only thing about you that is free from problems is the Atma. The Atma, yourself, is there untouched, untainted by whatever is going on in your mind, whatever is going on in the world. Yourself is untouched, untainted. Because your mind has differentiated and recognizes yourself, and understands this is Ishwara, your mind also is different, because the mind doesn't have the agitation, right? It doesn't have the agitation of trying to fulfill itself in the world, or the agitation of feeling separate from Ishvara. That type of thing isn't there anymore. And so the mind enjoys a natural ananda. Right? The mind itself enjoys a natural ananda because its baseline is much different. It's not asking of the world to do things that a normal person asks the world to. Normal means a person who doesn't have knowledge, the majority. Ask the world to do things, right, for it. That the jnani doesn't ask that anymore. But, okay, that's fine. And so there's the baseline peace of mind is a wonderful thing. That's all true. But that baseline peace of mind, it doesn't mean that there's only good thoughts happening, you know, that there's never negative thoughts, or that you don't make mistakes, or behave and make decisions and behave in the world, or be drawn into things that then you realize later that you wish you hadn't done that, that you wish you hadn't gotten involved in that situation. That's how it's going to be. It's not going to be, you know, unless you're going to be a record breaker. Either you are going to be the perfect person who makes all of the right choices. You know, we haven't met that person yet. I haven't met that person even in Swamiji. I have not met the person. Swamiji hasn't met the person either. And he's the person I hold in my highest esteem. Like somebody has to feel that position. He happens to feel that position for me. I hold him in the highest esteem. But that means for me is that in all of the mistakes he's made over the 30 or 40 years that I've known him now, I'm not asking him not to make mistakes. I'm just very, really learned from how he handles those mistakes that he makes. How does he handle it? How does he handle the adversity, the difficult things that happen? Because they certainly do happen. And he certainly has done things in that he wishes he hadn't done this or wishes he hadn't done that. It's not that he grieves or feels guilt trips himself. But, you know, it's not that at all. But then they're not perfect decisions. So how is he with that? And that's where I really learn. You know, how does he handle the life? How does he handle life? It's not that the life is perfect or that his life is an easy life. And then how does he handle his own mind? One of the greatest things that he told me was that, which I've passed on so many times, was that little sentence, "Oh, my mind does so many funny things." You don't pay attention to it. Right? It's not, my mind can think so many funny things. Something like that. My mind can think so many funny things. That's a huge thing to say. You know, because otherwise you think your mind should. If you're Jivanmukta, the prakriti, your share of the prakriti, should only be sattva. That's your share. Everybody else has sattva, rajas, and tamas. Right? Everybody else has the whole gamut of samskaras, but not me. Because I'm a Jivanmukta. No. What is your freedom is Aham Brahmasmi. You are Nirdvandva. Your being is free from Punya and Papa. The Atma is free from Punya and Papa. It is free from impurities. It is free from unsavory behavior. It is free from Adharma and Dharma. It is always the same. And that sameness of my being, that is the punya. And my mind rests in that security. That Atma is totally secure. And so resting in that security, I'm never without that security. The jnani is never without that security. That security is myself. And my mind enjoys that as its refuge. And because that is there as its very being of the mind doesn't need to be the world to be in a particular way. The prarabdha is enough. Whatever your prarabdha is, that's good enough. Right? Swamiji once said to me, this is another thing I often share, but it's so important to me. I must have been moaning about something. He said, listen, don't worry about the things that you don't have. Because they're infinite. The things you don't have are infinite. So don't worry about that. You enjoy and appreciate the things that you do have. And, you know, he said that to me at the right time. You know, sometimes people say that just the thing at the right time, that was the right time. But he said that to me, and I thought, oh, wow, that's really true. That is really true. What you don't have is infinite. What you do have, you have. And really, when you think about it, the prarabdha karma, your prarabdha karma is yours. It is yours. No one can take it away from you. And that was also that understanding, and that understanding, you know, to this day continues to grow and be meaningful to me, is that understanding that my prarabdha is my prarabdha. People may want to take it away, or I might want to get rid of it, you know. But neither is going to happen. Nobody's going to take it away, and I'm not going to get rid of it either. It's mine. It's mine. I'm secure in that, you know. And so I can just sit there, and the world can do whatever it does, but my prarabdha is my prarabdha. And so I can be secure in that. And enjoy, but how can I really be secure in it? Is not needing it one way or the other. That's what it boils down to. Your mind is secure in the Atma, which is not bound by change, and then this prarabdha is good enough. And remember, too, this is another, these are all the little things that have been meaningful to me. This life that you have now is one of a beginningless series of lives. So it's beginningless. The number of lives you've had up to this life is beginningless. So that means you've had, and if you can want to continue on, you can continue on for as long as you want to. You can only do so much in this one life. Right? One life, only so much can be packed into it. So in this life, this is it for you. This is your life. It's given to you. And so enjoy this one, because this time around, this is what it is. If you think that you want another kind of a prarabdha, then you can get that next life. You might not be able to get that one this life. This life, you have this one. This is the prarabdha. You know? And this prarabdha is made of sukha-dukha, 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 sukha-dukha. And it's a manifestation of your prakriti, of your samskaras, of your tendencies from past lives, and your samskaras that you've picked up in this life before knowledge. And so those samskaras are all in play. And they're coming up in terms of the environment or the prarabdha, and they're coming up in terms of your own desires, your own pravritti and nivritti. Now you become a mumukshu and you gain knowledge. But all of this stuff is still in play. Right? All of the prarabdha is still in play. The samskaras are still in play. You know, your preferences are still in play. You know? But the desire template has been neutered. The desire template is not what it used to be. The desire template used to be, I want this so that I can be happy. That's not there now. All of the prakriti is there. The pravritti nivritti is there in a burnt seed form. Right? Because my ananda is not at stake. And so I'm still a human. The Jivan Mukta is still a human being. Right? Still has limited knowledge. That's another thing with the jnani, mahatma. You know when we say mahatma? That's a big word. Mahatma actually just means a great soul, a great person, a spiritually mature person is what it means. But somehow a lot of stuff gets put onto to a Mahatma where they're no longer just a jnani. They're as though omniscient means that even outside of the realm of knowledge and clarity, what they believe to be, say, in politics. Really? In politics. Or in any other field, is the knowledge that they have in terms of self-knowledge, can that be put off onto or superimposed off onto knowledge of other subjects? It would say no, it can't be. They have relative limited knowledge. They have knowledge to the degree they have knowledge in another subject, in another subject, in another subject. Now, just think about yourself, as a Jivanmukta. Because as you're gaining clarity and knowledge, then we're talking about you becoming a Jivanmukta. You're spiritually mature. You have nishta in this knowledge. Now, does this mean that what you have to say about biology is revealed knowledge? Or what you have to say about politics is revealed knowledge? Or about history is revealed knowledge? Or about interpersonal relationships is revealed knowledge? Or about psychology, you know? Is it revealed knowledge? Of course it isn't. But then could there be some clarity there in the way you approach those subjects because of, you know, not having a projecting mind, having a certain level of objectivity? Could there be some better clarity there? Yeah, there could be that. But you're not going to become a master in any subject that you haven't mastered. And in fact, in the lore of, in the Sanskrit lore, there's a verse. It actually, I'll have to look it up. It comes somewhere in Bhandarka, one of these Sanskrit grammar books. But it's so amazing, some of these shlokas that they have. The shloka goes like this. It says, you know, watch out for somebody who's a master in a given subject, because they tend to think they're a master in other subjects also. That's the verse, you know. Watch out for somebody who has mastery in a given subject, because they will... See, when you have a mastery in a given subject, you feel so comfortable in that subject. You can expound on that subject because you have mastery in it. But then when you get to another subject, you don't have that mastery anymore. But yet you're used to being able to expound in that way. And you can't do it, so it's kind of frustrating. And so you just make it up. that's the idea. But all of these things, like Vidyaranya stays, you know, on these topics for a long time. But reason, you have to kind of, you know, if you're spending time on these texts by yourself, to just sit. Why? Because he's a brilliant man. Why is he spending all of this time talking about karma, prarabdha karma, talking about, and quoting, as we'll see, you know, he's going to go on now and quote anicca, what Krishna has to teach Arjuna about these anicca karmas, you know. Because Arjuna asks, why do these desires rise in my mind to do things that I know I don't want to do? How do those desires come? And Krishna tells me it's the prakriti. Very interesting. It's important to understand this so that you don't deny jnanam. You don't deny yourself knowledge because of notions about what it means to be a human being. But to separate being a jnani from being a human being is a problem. So I think that's one of the reasons he spends so many verses on this. So let's stop there. Om Purnamidah Purnamidam
Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vasishyate Om Shanti 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 Harihi Om Shri Gurupyo Namaha Harihi Om.